Michael Crichton has sold more than 100 million copies of his books. He was at one time the owner of the number one bestseller, the number one television show, and the number one movie in the country. He went to Harvard as a medical student, always wanting to write. Since then, he has turned writing into gold. His newest book is called Michael Crichton, Timeline. And once again, I'm pleased to have him on this program to talk about the book and so many other things that are part of his world. I'm pleased to have him back. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's good to see you. You now are a New Yorker, too, in a sense.
Right.
You're living upstate. That
That's
goes
right.
well.
Excellent.
I like it. You moved here primarily because you wanted your daughter to have access to a different kind of school system.
That's right. I mean, I'm an Easterner. And,
yeah, Roslyn, Long Island, as
that's
I remember.
Right, yeah. And I still think that Eastern education has a different quality.
Yeah, that's a company town out there primarily, isn't it? Los Angeles.
Los Angeles it is, yeah. Oh, sure. They even call it the company town.
Yeah, it's some company.
Yeah.
I was thinking about all the things you do and all of your interest in history and science, but in the end, when push comes to shove, you know, as they say in that often quoted cliche, you are a storyteller.
I think that's right, yeah.
That's what you do.
Yes. That's what I like to do.
Where does that come from?
You know, I don't know, because my daughter has it too, and it started at an early age. I mean, when I would tell her fairy tales, she'd stop me and go, "No, Dad, he doesn't come out of the warehouse. He stays in there until the giant leaves or something." I think, wait a minute, you know, yeah. You're editing Grimm's. I mean, but so there's some kind of an impulse about what makes a suitable story and what's right. And I think there may also be, it sounds funny, but there may also be some kind of sadistic impulse in there, too.
Sadistic?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds. The what you're really doing in a narrative is you're paying out information bit by bit, which also means that you're holding it back, mm-hmm. You know, and you're trying to make people worried about something. You know how it's going to turn out, but you want the reader to have this feeling intermediately. And in that kind of manipulation, which I think is very pleasurable to experience if it's done well, there's something like sadism. I mean, that's what Hitchcock was accused of, too.
Yeah, I know. Do you like the isolated quality of writing?
Well, usually when I'm writing, I wish I weren't. And when I'm working on a movie, I wish I was writing. So it's some way to be perpetually dissatisfied, I think. But yes, the answer is I do.
It's been a long time since you directed.
Yeah.
Why haven't you directed more? Westworld was the last thing I remember. Was it something after that?
There were things after that. Yeah. But I think primarily what's happened is that this has been a good writing time for me.
The 90s.
Yeah. And so that every time I think about directing something or writing something else, I think, well, I'll keep writing. I mean, it's that sort of moment-by-moment decision.
We've talked about this before, but everybody's curious about this. How is it you have this uncanny sense of choosing a serious subject that fascinates us, this having to be physics and going back to a previous time, quantum teletransportation, mm-hmm. Which is what? What is that?
Quantum teleportation?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very interesting. It's something that has just been demonstrated, or just last year, in several laboratories around the world. And it's talked about as if it were beam me up, Scotty. It's not really exactly. It's a transfer of a certain kind of information from one photon to another is what they're doing. But it implies instantaneous transportation of information across distances that are, doesn't matter how far, across the entire universe. And it's a very curious thing.
And you have to understand how time works, don't you, and how speed of light works and all of that.
Well, it's pushing at some of those notions. In other words, before quantum teleportation was demonstrated, there was a lot of thought among physicists that it might or might not actually be a real phenomenon. I mean, there was speculation. Now it turns out it is real.
What's real?
That this kind of transfer can occur instantaneously with nothing in between, no carrier mechanism.
Now, this book is about archaeologist from Yale going back to the 1357, the 14th century, right, traveling back to rescue one of their own, to bring back in 1999. That's not real.
No, not as far as I'm aware.
But that is part of the idea of quantum physics and teleportation.
Yes.
Does it draw on that or not?
It does, but I mean, I
you've taken a literal imagination here.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I don't want to say that quantum technology is going to lead to time travel. I don't think that's a fair thing to say.
But do you believe it will?
I don't know.
Ah, that's even more interesting. You don't know. I mean, do you believe it's highly unlikely, or do you believe it's possible?
I believe it's possible. If I had to guess, if you asked me to bet, I would bet against it.
What makes you think it's even remotely possible that somebody could travel back to the 14th century?
It's not clearly contradicted by theory. No, but I mean, that's really the... You know what I mean? I mean, there are certain kinds of things that...
I really don't know what you mean, because I know nothing about physics, but go ahead.
If you have an accepted theory, then it has certain consequences that follow from that. And if those... I mean, the simple one is it does seem to be very unlikely that you can travel faster than light. And one of the issues about quantum teleportation is it seems to be nudging at that potentially causing a problem. But in general, we believe you can't travel faster than light. So if you write a story in which someone travels faster than light, that's an impossible story, according to what we believe now. I try and stay within the boundaries of what's not understood to be impossible, even though there's dispute about it.
All right, let me frame this way, because this is interesting. You and the idea is interesting. Knowing what you did, you know, in so many other books that grabbed our attention, because you were on the cutting edge of what people talked about, whether it was sexual harassment and disclosure, whether it had to do with the rise of Japan and Rising Sun, and so many more, having especially to do with dinosaurs and all that came out of that. Where did you first get the idea? When did you say, Michael, there's a book here?
I don't know.
Okay, but about when? What started the process for you? You're reading a magazine and there's a story about...
No, this is odd. This is an odd one in a way, because for a long time I had wanted to do a time travel story. One reason is that I'm attracted to the challenge of trying to write a story that will be persuasive even for a few hours on some subject that's impossible or highly, highly unlikely. You know, all the time I was writing Jurassic Park, I kept thinking, this is a dinosaur story. And is anybody going to go for this?
But that's your commercial sense, too. I mean, some would say it's a story about biogenetics, and you're saying, no, it's a dinosaur story, which shows you your instinct for what sells, as does your ability to make people keep turning the pages. Mm. That's an instinct for what sells, the way you write. You'll give me that?
But I don't know how I do this.
Okay. But you know it's there.
Yes.
And you know it's a story about dinosaurs rather than some highfalutin idea of biogenetics.
That's right. I mean, that's been carried. And it was not obvious to me when I was writing it that I could get away with this, that I could carry it off. The people would say, oh, yeah. And you know, the first people who read it quite by accident were people in bioengineering fields. Yeah. And I was watching them just gulp it right down. And I thought, wow.
We got something here.
Yeah. And another equally challenging kind of a story is time travel.
All right, Ray Bradbury, Distant Thunder. What was that about?
Is that the one about the dinosaur?
Yeah, well, time travel, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people go back to hunt a dinosaur and somebody steps on a butterfly.
Right. So that's exactly
changes
right.
Changes
what happens in the future. Right.
There's actually a really interesting book by a physicist named Paul Nahan. I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly.
Right.
And about time machines. And one of the things he does is he summarizes all the writing that's occurred in the past, which is, in a way, very discouraging, because what you realize is that almost every kind of all the changes have been wrung. In fact, most of them have been wrung by the 1920s. So there isn't really any new thing to do there.
If someone says to you, you're marrying thriller with science fiction, you say, not so much fiction.
I hope, yeah.
Yes, a thriller. Yes, a novel. But less science fiction than you might imagine.
That's always my intent. Or my
and calling card.
Yeah. Yeah, because, for example, when you're talking about quantum physics, it's very, very difficult. And I'm hardly, you know, a person to really be knowledgeable. When I'm looking at this, it's so hard to describe it at all. I recognize that there's a certain level where a physicist would say, yes, that's the correct way to state it. But no one would get it at all. No reader would understand it. And then there's another way, which is pretty easy to understand, but the physicist would say, no, it's completely wrong. Somewhere in the middle is a way of putting this information that's okay to read for a reader, and the physicist will say, well, okay. And that's what I'm trying to, that's where I'm trying to get this. It's some balance between what's technically accurate and what's understandable, if you're not in that field.
All right, let's talk now about create. We know at some point you got interested in this, and you know you figured out a kind of storyline. You got to have characters, all right? So you set this, tell me the story. Guy goes to France and he's doing a little
There's a group of people
research.
doing research in France.
Right.
They're historical archaeologists,
right.
Medieval archaeologists. They're excavating a site.
Let me interrupt this one second before you pick it up. Have you always been interested in things medieval?
No.
So the 14th century didn't have any special appeal to you?
Not when I began.
Not knights and battles and the Hundred-Year War and all
knights,
that?
Knights.
Knights did?
Knights, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because knights are cliché. You know, everybody thinks they know
Johnny
what
Knight,
are.
Camelot, and all that. Yeah, right.
So, and
round
for,
table.
Yes, right, round table. And I always thought, what's there? It is round. I always thought, what was the reality?
Yeah.
What was actually going on? What was knighthood really, and what was, I mean, all this idea of courtly love, I don't know, I mean, well, it doesn't sound like, you know, how the world worked if you're very young, and young men and women, I don't think that was at such a distance. And so I would have these sort of thoughts, but I didn't know anything. And one of the pleasures of working on this book is that I got to find out.
About all your books, you get to find out.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so you've got to have characters. You got these archaeologists, historical archaeologists,
right?
They're doing some investigations in France.
Right.
What happens?
The company that's funding them—that they see as a sort of benign
patron—sends
a vice president over who says, "You know, we really want to start reconstructing this village," and they say, "No, we're not ready." And they say, "Yeah, we should, and you know, you can at least build the castle wall from here to here, and then over to the round tower in the woods." And one of them says, wait a minute, what round tower? Nobody knows this. And so they go out in the woods and start looking, and indeed there is the remains of a round tower. And this vice president knows more about their site than they do.
Yeah.
And they want to know why. That's the initial impulse. So the leader of this group, who is a senior professor, goes back to the company headquarters, essentially vanishes.
All of a sudden, he's in 1357.
Well, what happens is that, well, we shouldn't go through the whole thing.
Yeah, but I'm not going to tell it away, but we've got to get him. You want people to be interested.
He's been gone for several days, and they're continuing their excavations, and they find a set of documents. And when they, from some earlier time, they've been buried, they uncover them. And when they open them up and look at them, there's a letter in the professor's handwriting that says, help me.
So the race is on. We now got a thriller.
Yeah.
We're going to have our fabulous Yale graduate students in battle with all the knights they find in 1357 who are our bad guys. Right. So we got our good guys from Yaleys and our bad guys. We've got a corporate billionaire who's sort of behind some of this, right? Sounds a little like Jurassic Park.
It certainly bothered me when I did it. And I finally concluded that there isn't another form. I mean, in other words, if you abstract the form enough, then everything looks like everything. You know, Bambi looks like the life of Hitler.
I mean, with somebody.
So
I wouldn't say that.
Well, it does, you know. It's trouble with the father, and you know.
Exactly, that's right. So, Bambi wanted to be a painter.
That's
player,
right.
Like,
it's yeah, the whole thing. Right. Yeah. So,
go ahead.
So, but I just couldn't think of another way to do it. You know, I mean, in other words, what they share in common is that these are technologies that are being pushed that are phenomenally expensive. And so if you're going to try and tell a story that in some way rationalizes them or speaks about them as if they were real, one of your problems in each case is who's going to pay for this? It's a stunning amount of money. Where does it come from? It's going to come from someone rich.
All right. We know what you've got to do now, okay? I mean, so where do you go do your research? Where do you find out? Why do you choose the 14th century is my first question.
Okay.
1357, right?
1357. About
that. Why then? At the end of the Hundred Years' War.
No, it's actually early.
Earlier than the Hundred Years' War.
Right.
The Hundred Years' War was from what to what?
1331 to 1450 or 60.
Right. So it's during the Hundred Years' War.
Right.
Right. Why then?
A couple of reasons. I wanted a period of warfare in which ordinary life was very chaotic. You know, there was this element of civil war in all this. There's an element of war between France and England. It's very confused. It's very bloody. You never know what's going to happen next. So I wanted that kind of a really chaotic time. It suited that. Then there was an event that I thought was, I couldn't get out of my mind, which was in 1356, the year before at the Battle of Poitiers, which the English won against the French. The English captured the French king and took him back to England, where he was ransomed for an enormous amount of money. But this notion that your king could be captured by the enemy and then, of course, treated as a, in this courtly fashion, as but also, in, you know, welcomed with all the ceremony, you know, because the nobility is really cuts across all these national boundaries. I couldn't stop thinking about this notion that the king of a country was gone and what that would mean to the remnants of that place, which was already not yet a nation state. I mean, England at this time was pretty much England, but France was not France.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've pointed out, and I've seen you say this, that this is an interesting time because it's sort of a kind of enlightened period. This is the time that Oxford and Cambridge were sort of, the seeds were planted.
That's right.
Yes. This was the time that nation states were being formed.
Right.
So a lot of interesting things are happening. It's not so far back that you can't find interesting things that are taking place.
Right. And it's also the time of the, almost the very, not the moment, but the immediate period of the decline of knights. Because the English longbowmen have become supreme over everything else. And mounted shock cavalry, which is really the justification of all the knights, I mean, these great charging men on horseback with lances, doesn't work anymore. I mean, the French still do it. The English dismount their knights to fight. But the French still charge, and they're just slaughtered.
It's not a smart thing to do.
There's rain of arrows.
Yeah.
The guys can shoot 20 arrows a minute.
20 arrows a minute.
I mean, it's, and they can shoot them 200 yards and be accurate. And it's
so it's over for the guys on the horses.
It's over. That's right. If they don't die, the horses do.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, did you fancy yourself as being a knight?
No.
Never thought about that?
No, I didn't have that.
Didn't have that?
No, because when you're doing something like this, you're gonna identify with the contemporary people.
Right. Now, some might say, well, boy, how do contemporary people who are academicians and no put down of academicians or archaeologists. Mm. They're all of a sudden they're going to be transported back, and they're going to be going hand to hand with all these bad guys who are inhabitants of the 14th century.
How can they do it?
How can they do it?
Well, you better justify it before you start.
You better, exactly.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's part of the novelist's challenge.
Right. Well, there's that, fortunately for me, there's this area which is called variously, you know, but one thing you call it is experimental archaeology, yeah. In which people try and recreate conditions of living in order to understand what it must have been like. So there are, one of the characters is one of these people who's really interested in learning how to use a broadsword and fight in a joust, and is acquiring all these skills in his capacity as a historian, but it turns out to be useful.